Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Please state the name or number.
The Drive with Bob and Jeff. Dial 869-1240.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
The Drive on KFH.
All right, this is Big Audio Dynamite, the music today from Brian Bellamy. How about that? Joined now by Jim Barnett. He is a radio analyst for the Golden State Warriors after many years on the TV side of their broadcast and 11 years as a player in the National Basketball Association. Hello, Jim.
Thank you for having me on the show. I think I'm talking Bob right now, correct?
This is Bob, and Jason is the other co-host, and we're thrilled to have you for sure.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the current state of things. Obviously, no games going on anywhere. The NBA seems to be moving toward a restart. What's your opinion, and what do you think will happen?
Well, I hope they can restart, and I hope they can do it safely. That's the main thing. You can't be haphazard about this, and there's a lot to consider. There are a lot of factors. There's not going to be any fans. We know that. It'll be a strange scenario. First of all, we're living right now in a very, very strange time, and I've been around a long time. I actually lived through the polio epidemic in the 40s and early 50s before the vaccine, and that was something I remember, my parents and everybody were always afraid of, but this is quite different. And so as far as the NBA, it's too bad. I'd like it to start again, but you have to be safe. It's going to be a whole different ball game. I don't know. I've read everything. We have no idea. I think we'll know a little bit more maybe around June 1st, that first week of June, but we have to wait till Adam Silver comes and makes his next statement about that. I know all the things. They might go to Orlando, Las Vegas, stay in a hotel. I don't know what it would be about broadcasting. We'd probably stay back and broadcast from the studio, but that's speculation. For the players, I feel badly for society in general, because the economic impact of this, there are going to be a lot of people that have lost jobs and won't be able to get their jobs, and lost small businesses and not going to get back. So there are bigger things to consider other than just the NBA season. Right now I've been around the NBA since, I got out of college. So it's very foreign to me, and I do miss the game.
Well, I guess you kind of touched on a question I wanted to ask you. It was if they were going to allow guys like yourself for radio and TV to be there to do the games, and other reporters and writers and that sort of thing, to watch the games, and if not, are you comfortable going if they said you had to go and be there for the game, or are you still kind of in that spot where maybe it'd be better for me to do it from somewhere else?
Well, I've always been a risk taker. I'm a high risk guy, as a matter of fact. But I also, when it comes to your life and death, I'm certainly going to try to avoid the coronavirus, because I am. I'll be candid. I'm 75 years old. I'll be 76 in July, and I have a lot of living still to do. But that would not concern me at all. I know the NBA, if we went somewhere, I would feel certainly safe. that everybody is, you know, and especially, well, if they had a vaccine, but I think that's not going to happen by then. But if they said it's safe, I know Adam Silver, I know the integrity of the NBA, the integrity of the Golden State Warriors. I would go anywhere if they said this is what we're going to do and it's going to be as safe as possible. I wouldn't be concerned whatsoever.
Jim Barnett, our guest, a basketball All-American at Oregon, played 11 seasons in the NBA. The very first season you played was 1966-67 for the Celtics. Bill Russell was a player coach. John Havlicek, Casey Jones, Sam Jones were teammates. Your last year was 76-77 with the Philadelphia 76ers. Julius Irving was a teammate, and there were all kinds of NBA greats and Hall of Famers in between. What an amazing career you had, and just some of the people you got to know. Tell us about that first team you were on, the Celtics.
Yeah, it was. You have to realize it's a very different era. The minimum salary in 1966 when I got out of college was $7,500. That's $7,500. That was the minimum, and I think today it's well over $500,000 for someone that's going to play in the NBA. And I was their number one draft pick. There were 10 teams in the league. I was the eighth pick overall. My salary wasn't much more than $7,500. Add another $4,000. So $3,500. I think I made $11,000 my first year, and got a $500 signing bonus. But, you know, those were the days where I never thought about playing in the NBA until I was a junior in college. You know, I'm not thinking of, you know, coming in. You couldn't come out. In fact, there was a rule that you could not play in the NBA and go to the draft until your high school class had graduated from college. And that's why everyone went to college and played for 4 years, because they couldn't play in the NBA anyway. They could sit around for 4 years and you know, take their chances, but you could not, if you got out of high school, which I did in 1962, you could not play in the NBA until 1966. That was a rule that they had. You had to be, you know, basically 4 years of college. And that's why we all went to college. And that's why we all, you know, gained fundamentals. And yes, some of us could have gone to the NBA earlier. And there were phenoms that could have played 1 year of college and gone to the NBA. I'm not sure there was ever a high school player in that era that could have made a transition. I know Gus Johnson, when I saw him play at the University of Idaho when I was a sophomore at the University of Oregon, Gus Johnson was a man among boys. And he could have gone to the NBA without question long before that. A lot of people probably don't know about Gus Johnson, but he's a guy that averaged 15 rebounds a game in the NBA per game. He's deceased now, but a beast of a man and a hell of a nice guy too. But that first year with the Celtics, you know, Bill Russell they'd won 8 straight championships, and I let you know, I was very intimidated. I came in there and, you know, I kind of kept my mouth shut, do what I was told. I was happy to make the team. I didn't have a guaranteed contract. I could have been cut just like any other of their draft picks or free agents that were trying out. And it was dog eat dog. And we had 15 exhibition games before we ever played an NBA regular season game. We had 8 intra-squad games, which turned out to be like a night practice. And the Celtics would go to a high school gymnasium, and Red Auerbach was then the president. He'd been the coach, and he'd given up to Bill Russell. And, you know, people would pay a buck, you know, $1, $1.50 to play in a high school gymnasium. We would play intra-squad games. We actually played 23 regular season, our regular NBA games, 48-minute games before the season began. And we also played exhibition games against Philadelphia, St. Louis, Baltimore. We played 12 games in 12 straight nights in 10 different states, traveling by bus with the opposition on the bus. But it was a hell of an experience. Wow. But I have to say, I saw some great basketball that year. And since there were only 10 teams, you played everybody 9 times. You played Philadelphia. You saw Russell and Chamberlain go at each other in the regular season 9 separate times. And that was something to really behold.
Well, I'm just kind of curious about, with all these great players you got to play with, who was one of your favorite guys that you played with? And I'd love to hear a story about it, because that's some of my favorite things. When we get to talk to guys like yourself, is just hearing some of the stories about yourself or other players.
Well, you know, I have always been saying I played with 10 Hall of Famers. and I'm looking at the thing and everything, and I realize I left off Casey Jones from the Celtics. I left off Bill Bradley from the Knicks. I actually were teammates with 12 Hall of Famers, four from the Celtics with Russell, Havlicek, Sam Jones, and Casey Jones, Elvin Hayes in San Diego, and Rick Barry and Nate Thurman with Golden State, Pete Maravich with the New Orleans Jazz, and then Walt Frazier, Earl Monroe, Bill Bradley with the Knicks, and then Dr. J. I played with these guys. They were a lot better. It was really something to be around these guys. I learned so much. I could talk about a lot of different ones. I mean, Elvin Hayes is one of like five guys who has over 25,000 points and over 15,000 rebounds, led the league in scoring as a rookie, came from a small town in Louisiana, made a tough social adjustment into the NBA, and then really earned his stripes and was a heck of a basketball player. But playing with that Celtic team and seeing Bill Russell and not knowing really all of what he was trying to do until I gained some perspective and gained a little knowledge and gained some maturity to see how he was. And the work ethic of John Havlicek and the talent that they had. You know, Don Nelson, by the way, was on that team. I think he was like 26, 27 years old at the time. The most unusual player I played with was Pete Maravich. He was ahead of his time, guys. They held him back. They wouldn't let him be the showman that he would be today. They would allow it. This was an owner's league at that time and a coach's league. Today, it's a player's league. They've got power. And Pete Maravich, you would be talking about Stephen Curry, LeBron James. You would be talking in the same sentence, Pistol Pete Maravich. He only played 10 years in the league. But he would put on a show. He was a good 6'5 and a half to 6'6". He could handle the ball. He could score inside on drives. He had a quick first step. He could shoot the three-point line. I mean, my goodness, he never played with that three-point line. Maybe his last year in the league, because in 1979 is when it came in, and he came into the league in 1970. He would have been a bigger star today than he ever was in the years that he played in the 70s. Bill Bradley, under the radar guy, a Princeton graduate, a Rhodes Scholar, 18 years as a senator in Washington, D.C., playing with him was, and just being around him, was real, real special. He was cerebral on the court. He couldn't really, didn't have quick feet, couldn't guard anybody very well. You wonder how he got his shot off, because he was always thinking ahead two or three steps, and he would go back door. He was clever. He couldn't dribble past anybody, but he knew how to get open, and he had an incredibly quick release on his shot, a lot like Stephen Curry. Didn't have that kind of range. But he was one of the great, great shooters. I'm not sure it's ever happened. In those days, too, they had in the NCAA tournament, they had a winner, but they also played for third place. And I believe when in 1965, Princeton was in the Final Four, and they lost in the first round, and they played for the third place game, and he scored 57 points. And he was the most outstanding player.
We're pretty aware of that game here, Jim.
Yeah, yeah.
That game was against Wichita State, so we're pretty aware of that game for sure.
Oh, Wichita, yeah, well, there you go. Abe Stallworth
and stuff. In 1965. Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you quickly. You were drafted by the Celtics. You played 1 year in Boston with a team full of legends. But then you were drafted by the San Diego Rockets in the expansion draft. 1967, and you went to one of the worst teams in the NBA. How'd you feel about that at the time?
Well, I was liberated because I got a chance to become a starter on that team, and that's when I started. That basically made my NBA career, because that first year I got injured and missed about 30 some games because I had a knee surgery, but I still averaged 9 points a game. The next year I was starting and I averaged close to 14.6 to be precise, I think. And the next year, right around 15. And so I knew that I was going to be an NBA player, and I knew I was going to play at least 10 years in the league. And after 3 years there, I was picked I got traded actually to Portland, a brand new team. And there I averaged 18 and a half. So I was off and running, and then came to my favorite team of all time, the Warriors, and played for a great Hall of Fame coach, by the way, Al Attles, and played with Rick Barry and one of my best friends, Nate Thurman, until he died a few years ago. One of the most underappreciated players in the league, except from the players. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar today, you say, who was the toughest defender against you? And he'll say Nate Thurman. An interesting story about Nate Thurman, if I will. Nate Thurman had never played against Lou Alcindor. He was Lou Alcindor at the time when he came out of UCLA as a rookie. And they played the Lakers like on a Friday night, and then on a Saturday night came to play the Warriors in San Francisco. And Nate Thurman never told anybody, paid for a flight himself, flew down to L.A., bought a ticket to the game, scouted Kareem, as I say, Lou Alcindor at that time, scouted him, and flew back home early the next morning. They played that night. He held him to his season low as a rookie, 17 points, I believe it was, might have even been 16. And if you look at that first year of Kareem playing against San Francisco Warriors at that time, he was 7 of 25, 7 of 22. He was around 33%. And Nate Thurman personally told me, he said, you know, by doing that and being so effective against him that first game, I always felt I had an edge on him. But, you know, this is the kind of guy Nate Thurman was that would do something like that, go and scout on his own and pay for his own trip because that's how much he cared and that's how much he knew about basketball. And he got a step on Kareem Abdul-Jabbar because of that.
Well, Jim, we appreciate all the stories. We hope that you can get back in some kind of broadcast booth very soon to broadcast Golden State Warriors game. Thanks to Ray Ritter for setting this interview up, and thanks to you for doing it. We appreciate your time.
Bob and Jason, thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it as well.
You bet. That's Jim Barnett, part of the broadcast team for the Golden State Warriors. We'll take a break, come back, and talk to Tom Hedrick, another broadcaster. He was in the CBS radio booth for Super Bowl I, and that game involving the Packers and the Chiefs will be rebroadcast on Monday night at 6 o'clock right here on KFH. Tom Hedrick next, The Drive.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.